Jack, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively out here at Coco's in Lauraville. We've had Denny stop by, former News American guy. Three News American guys in one room. It's been 1986. Yeah. It's been 38 years, 37 years?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, wow,
right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I had Nussgaard out telling those stories at my 25th anniversary, so.
Right.
No, told some stories.
Nuss, yeah. Nuss is a classic NA guy, too, yeah.
We were telling some Stedman stories. All are brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'm giving scratch-offs away. Our friends at Window Nation have my wacky hat, 866-90-NATION, and Jiffy Lube Multicare. We're Coco's. I've got my Kiss belt buckle off because I discovered Kiss in the neighborhood. Mike Resigliano, Resig. No one calls him Mike or Michael.
And by the way, I have a wacky hat.
Okay, hold on. Put that. Oh, geez. Here we go with the hair. All right, hold on. This is the Resig Grinch hat.
I've had this hat for
Put your headset on. See if we can make it work.
I've had this hat for 30 something years also.
I've seen what you got to fix your headset here.
It's not going to work.
Hold on. It's going to totally work. It's going to work like perfect. Yeah, just fix your headset. Get it flopped. There you go.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, so this Grinch hat I've had for 38 years or so, and it gets better. The rattier it gets, the better it gets.
It stands up a little bit more on its own, I think. Resig exactly. is our co-host with a K, and comedian with a K, and artist with an A. Ron Cassie's here. He is a senior editor at Baltimore Magazine, where the Diners issues at. You got what? You said you're doing something next month that's going to be cool, like a winter wonderland.
Well, we're supposed to get snow this year. If people are familiar with the old Farmer's
Almanac. Cold as hell this morning.
Cold as hell. We actually had some flurries the other morning. And so we have a big winter wonderland issue coming out in January, which actually goes to print like next month. You know, where to ski, where to sled, where to ice skate. There's more places to ice skate outside than you think in Baltimore, not just the Inner Harbor, but which is great. But Four Seasons has a rink, White Marsh has a rink, and then there's all the indoor places.
I saw a great black and white picture of the rink at Memorial Stadium's lot on the Ellerslie Avenue side.
Oh.
Like in 1970s, kind of like... I'm like, oh, yeah, they had a rink out there.
Don't remember that at all.
Patterson Park always had a rink.
And Baltimore, you don't think, obviously, we're not Aspen, but, you know, there's a lot of skiing within a short drive. I mean, whether you go to Round Top and everything in Elk in Pennsylvania, or go to some of the great places in Virginia, West Virginia, Seven Springs, Wisp, of course, is a great resort in Maryland. And, you know, in kind of researching the story, came across this great story. The first competitive ski race below the Mason-Dixon line was out in Western Maryland, where New Germany State Park is, which used to be a little ski resort.
That's cool.
1940s. Trivia. It was called, that area used to be referred to as the Maryland Alps. And this is when, so Wisp gets built like in the early 50s, but it's on the heels of this at New Germany. And they literally had like an old Dodge pickup with, motor doing the tow rope.
Oh, right.
Driving the tow rope up.
Wow.
And apparently there's according to the stories, and, you know, the sun and everything, there was an attractive woman who worked at the Norwegian embassy in D.C.
I bet there was.
Yeah.
Yes. And
probably a few.
And she apparently, you know, was the star of the day. They had the first sanctioned race by whatever was the United States Ski Authority. Then we forget, like, skiing is in the United States is a pretty new phenomenon. It didn't really take off till like the 60s.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
there was no real skiing until like the 1960s.
Skiing was such a Euro thing? Probably.
It really was. It was really like 1960 Olympics, I want to say. 1964 Olympics is when the Jean-Claude Keelys and stuff kind of captured the American imagination. And that's really when skiing begins here.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Does
not go back to the Civil War like baseball. It's a really relatively very new phenomenon.
I told the people at Coco's I'd learn stuff because Cassie would start talking and I'd shut up.
You know, you never did see skiing movies like in black and white. You know, never. You just saw only
the Three Stooges didn't ski.
that's a good barometer of it. The Stooges never skied.
They played football though.
They did.
It was a little the only skiing there was like
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I know that.
You might be the Three Stooges.
I could have sang right with the nest. Yeah. I'm a big Stooges guy.
Press. So, have you ever been to Rocky Gap, or have you ever been out to Wisp or Deep Creek, any of that?
Yes.
You have. I had not been out there until 2 years ago.
And
one of the great things about the Crab Cake Tour is that when I took it on, and the Ravens are throwing me out, and Trump's running the country, and we got all these things are happening. We're in a plague, and we're trying to stimulate local business. The Crab Cake Tour, for me, has taken me places in our state that I just never... have gone. I was not a skier. I'm not an outdoor person. You know what I mean? I chased girls. I chased bands. I chased sports. I chased beaches as a younger person, right? So I've been to a lot of cities, but I haven't been to a lot of towns, right? Unless they had a college football environment or something that would bring me there. So I would always go toward Cumberland, but like the football game would take me up toward Somerset and toward Breezewood and Pittsburgh. So Falling Water, as an example, Deep Creek Lake, Rocky Gap, the city of Cumberland. Driving through.
Cool, yeah.
So like I've fallen in love with that area.
It's beautiful. Garrett County, by a little more history, used to be one of the maple sugar like capitals of the United States before it all moved to Vermont.
Right.
And they still make maple sugar there. Out in Garrett County.
I bring
you
it home.
You can go to the restaurants
Maco
there.
Summer, yeah.
And the restaurants will, you know, boil their own maple sugar in the restaurants. Nice. So you got there for some pancakes before you go skiing.
Nice.
The state parks out there too. A bunch of them have, you know, rent you free like snowshoes or cross country skis.
If people haven't been to Swallow Falls,
if you go snowshoe skiing, Ness, please let me know. I really want to come and see that. I really want to see you go snowshoe.
It's funny you would bring that up, Rasig, on the show. I went with my friend Scotty P.
Okay.
23 years ago. It was 25. It was 1998. We went to Lillehammer, Norway.
Wow.
We went to Sweden. We went to Amsterdam. We went to Stockholm. We went to Oslo, and we went to Lillehammer. We were in Lillehammer when the Nagano Olympics were happening. I went out and I did the long skis, because cross country skiing is the national sport in Norway. So we're in Norway, no kidding. We're in Oslo in a bar, and everyone in the bar is watching skiing as though it's American football.
Sure.
Like it's a big deal. So I have done it, and I tell my wife I did it. There's pictures of me putting them on. There's really no pictures of me doing it well. Because I made it from... I didn't make it from here to your house. I mean, that'd be 3 blocks. Right, I didn't make it 3 blocks.
You did it.
I mean, I paid the stuff. I put it all on. I took a look at it, and I said to Scotty P., there's no way this is doing that. But one thing that I've always loved about winter sports, and Ron, you can speak to this because I've done shtick on this for 20 years. Every time the Winter Olympics comes on, the curling thing, right? I mean, a broom, a hockey puck, ice, you're basically playing horseshoes, kind of, sort of, or you're playing like, you guys are Italian, so it's like playing,
bocce.
It's like bocce, right? On ice. Beer's involved. Pizza sometimes is involved. Canadian, pretty Canadian girls. You've seen their team, right?
Well, so Italian girl last year. I mean, the last Olympics. Oh, my goodness.
So what
she was great, too.
So what I'm saying is curling, to me, is that has more appeal to me than cross-country skiing or anything where I could break my neck.
You know there's a curling center, like a national curling center in Laurel, Maryland. So this is in our upcoming issue. We cover maple sugar, hot chocolate, sledding, first day hikes, polar bear punch.
All right, so what I want to do
a whole little story
year,
on the Laurel with photographs, the Laurel Curling
my
Center.
My holiday party this year is, you
a
know.
Curling party.
No, it's Dan Roderick's. We're doing it over at the BMA with Dan for my friends. Next year, I'm going to do curling. Next year, that's a get ready
That'd
for Christmas
fun.
Type of thing. I mean, it feels like you want a hot toddy when you're doing curling, right? You can have like a Irish coffee. What do you think?
Yeah, they'll get you out there right away. Yeah.
You've done this.
I have not done the curling.
Would honestly. You want to curl?
Absolutely, of course, yeah.
Who would turn? You wouldn't turn down curling, would you?
Never.
If I said to you I was having a holiday party.
I never thought I would, but I love it.
If you
want to
go ice fishing, I may say, you know, I don't know about that. But curling for sure, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I would go fly fishing, ice fishing. Ron Cassie's here. He's the executive editor, senior something editor of all things Baltimore Magazine. Don't tell Mike Teitelbaum he was on the show and I gave the wrong title. Max is mad at me. I didn't win best of again. I'm giving her a hard time. And, you know, you're not the one to talk to about that, right?
You know, we have a very secretive process about how all the selections are made. I can't really go into, of course.
Just like elections. It's a secret process. Rasig is here. So I wrote this stuff down. And you said talking heads to me, right, a minute ago. And a month and a half ago, the Talking Heads movie came out, right? Stop Making Sense.
Yeah.
It was re-released from 1983.
Best concert film
ever,
yeah.
Best concert film ever.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went the day it opened, and I sat in the D-Box. You know what D-Box is? Max does, because she's a movie person. And I begged her to come down and do this that day. She was going... Max. So this D-Box seat, I go down to Arundel Mills Mall, and the movie's on the IMAX in there, right?
Wow.
And I paid the extra $6 to get the chair, and it's a chair that moves and has special sound and special movements and haptics, 56,000 different movements that the movie is made for. So it's a 40-year-old movie that was kind of weird and artsy and the greatest concert movie ever.
Jonathan Demme.
They took it and made it more experiential with the camera and movement. And everything about the movie is like David Byrne's sort of weirdness, right?
Yes.
Baltimore, by the way, Bike Lane David Byrne, which is where this all started.
Lithicum, right? Yeah.
So I had such a beautiful experience that Friday that I texted all my friends who might want to go. Thomas Dolby, because he's a music guy and a total nerd about movies. I knew he would love Talking Heads. I put an APB out online and said this was one of the great experiences that I've... Something very unique that I've done. Kind of like soaring at Epcot. A once-in-a-lifetime sort of weird thing with this movie. Rasig and John Allen, another victim of my crab cake tour and my friendship, decided to meet me at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning and go to Arundel Mills and sit in this special chair on my recommendation and watch Stop Making Sense. First time I've had you on a show, so I need you to talk about this.
I gave up my yoga, which I don't like giving up on Sunday, to do this. Nestor really
you look
had
fat,
to talk,
by the way, too, so, with a pH, you know.
Ness had talked me into it. I just said, and the reason, because Nestor does have a lot of different experiences, and he's raving about this as one of the greatest, it's got to be good. So I took the chance. I was happy. I was so thrilled I did. I mean, it was just such an incredible thing. I mean,
different than having it home by 100,
well,
right?
Just having it on a big screen. I've only seen it on a small screen. Just that by itself would have been amazing for me. But then the whole chair thing and everything else, you know, like...
We were laughing in the middle of the show. It's like a roller coaster.
It is like
ride.
A roller coaster.
And you start
but
to giggle.
As you said, it goes right with the music. So you're really feeling the whole thing. You know, like, I appreciate that.
Well, he comes out on stage and drops the boombox.
Yeah.
And he starts. And you're like, all right, this is kind of cool. And the chair is just kind of swaying. Psycho Killer. And you start to move a little bit more.
Yeah.
Then the second song comes out, and Tina comes out, and they got the bass, and it's kind of a lovely little ditty. And you feel the bass like go boom, 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 a little bit in you. And then they roll the drums out for the third song.
Right.
And Chris Franz comes in, and he hits the hi-hat, and he hits the snare, and the chair activates.
Right, yeah.
And I brought John Allen, who's a drummer of all drummers, Child's Play, out on tour right now with Stone Horses and Brother King, actually playing in Nashville tonight. So I love you, John. But John came out, and I said to John, I'm like, they're both great artists. You're an artist. John was always an artist, percussionist, musician, like film, like music, like the Talking Heads enough to want to tolerate it and see it. And the two of them were kind of like, this was, you have to have the chair, and the movie has to be made for the chair. The only other thing that was ever a threat to do this, my wife almost saw Top Gun, and Top Gun's made for that chair, right?
Sure, yeah.
For action movies and stuff like that, right? And my wife didn't sit in it because she thought she might get a little nauseous. You could turn the haptics down, or you could turn it off if you get a little
I turned mine up, man, like it was just too much fun. Turned it all the way up.
Up to 11.
Up to 11, right.
Oh, yeah. So
exactly.
But you mentioned David Byrne of Talking Heads, and I know you love that movie, too, because I think you commented on my Facebook that day.
I love the movie. Psycho Killer. I mean, the first, I was like 1979. It was really like the first albums I bought, like as a teenager, that was like my music kind
coming of
thing.
Age,
like
yeah.
coming of age.
Yeah.
Where you're not listening to what some of the older brothers are, because the older brothers were into classic rock, you know, and they had all that stuff.
All that
was a
Zeppelin.
They had an early set. We love Zeppelin, of course, but you know, that when the Talking Heads came and the new wave came and the stuff out of Manchester and the UK came and Elvis Costello, and that was more my music. And yeah, I mean, I sometimes, even when I'm working or writing, we'll just put on like the YouTube version of like Stop Making Sense.
We'll
just
right.
play one track after another.
Great.
Just everything is just so good about that. But I've seen it at the Charles the movie years ago.
Okay, they played back there again, and they do it.
Yeah.
There were several different versions of the movie. There was a D-box with a chair. There was an IMAX version. There was a 2D, 3D, 4D, some weird D type thing going on with it. So, I mean, but that movie's iconic, and 40 years later, I had never seen the movie.
Scorsese, of course, has done some great concert films, right, with the band and the Stones. I did like the Stones one a lot. I really did. That's my favorite of all time, no doubt. But my favorite movies, period, ever.
This opened my eyes, and when I talked to John, and I haven't had John on the show because he's been out on the road with the band, and they're doing Child's Play again in a couple weeks down a soundstage where John Waters will be there. John Waters will wear that hat, by the way. And you know, I think the part of the movie and the lore of it and all these years later and that band having broken up and never done it again, the opening of my mind for it was I've seen U2 in 3D. The Modell family was involved in that. John Modell made that movie, the U2 3D movie. And 3D movies are like about tricks, like Adam Clayton cutting your head off with a bass and you duck because it's 3D. And we've all worn the goofy goggles and gone into the movies and done all that. This was like a different thing. And I thought restoring movies that have that sort of, if you two did rattle and hum and made the chair move with Bono during, you know, Bullet the Blue Sky. So I started to think about music and movement in a different way because of that. And also thinking, like, would, because all my bands are dying. Fake Kiss is showing up tonight, right? And lip syncing, and they're done, right?
You'll be there for that then?
Well, I mean, either my musicians are dead or dying or aging out. I went to see you two at the Sphere. Unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life. Like, so I've had these musical motion visual experiences that lead me to believe, and I don't, you know, want to, that I could wear one of those experiential,
the Oculus
glasses, right? I could put myself at the Summit in Houston for that Journey concert that I saw on MTV when I was, or the band, or Scorsese, or Stones made an IMAX movie, right? So I'm thinking the Stones are never going to be that good again, right? I mean, they're touring and God bless, and that's all. But these iconic music things, there's going to be another level. What's the thing that Frank Zappa, the hologram? They're doing hologram tours.
They'll be at Shea Stadium in 1964 and the Beatles came or something at some point.
Right. That's what I'm saying is the experiential part. There's an Elvis hologram show, I think, and there's a Frank Zappa hologram show.
I would go to that.
They're going to make a Prince one, right? I mean, well, it does come down to going to see tribute bands.
Right.
Right? And why I would want to go see a U2 tribute band or an REM tribute band or a Smith tribute band. Right? You want to you want to feel with that music. Yeah. And we're all three of us love music, right?
Right.
I just think that movie, that Stop Making Sense thing that I experienced is something that for the rest of my life, they're going to be making our music, whatever our music is from before. Jimmy Buffett's dead, right? Like, you want to attend a Jimmy Buffett concert, there's going to have to be a way to bring that back to life.
That's a close way to do it.
And I think that's going to be the way we experience music. It's scary. It's a little weird. But I think that's going to happen.
All right.
You know, this is a little aside, but you know where good IMAX movies is the Maryland Science Center. Like, I'm into the nature stuff, the flight of the butterflies and the beers.
I love that
They have great IMAX 3D experiences for those films. Because it's a little, I don't know if it's because it's small or what exactly it is, but it's totally better than like when I used to go, when I've seen like action movies in 3D or something like that.
Right, oh yeah.
And it's the one plane, you know, this is really
I don't like theaters because people talk and they, you know what I mean? I like stopping the movie at home and all that. So to get me out to a theater, it's got to be something like really
and
like
I
special.
I told a number of people about that experience that I had at that show. So I'm assuming
I'm really disappointed I was left off that text.
Yeah, I know. I think you would have.
I invited everybody.
Did you? Okay, maybe I just missed
it. I invited the world. Well, I invited Max. So someone from Baltimore Magazine was invited.
She's the film critic.
I'm like Chad Steele. Yeah. I invited your organization, just not you. Speaking of that, I want to talk about, because we were talking about media and stadiums, and you're a media guy. Sig, you've worked, I don't think you consider yourself a media guy, but you were a critical, mean-spirited cartoonist when you needed to be.
Yes.
You had Ken Rosenthal yelled at by Eddie Murray.
Right.
He told that story last time.
Yes.
I mean, Sig, like, drew stuff that pissed people off.
Sports journalism, I mean, sports cartooning or editorial cartooning.
I mean, journalism really begins when you're writing stuff that's going to make somebody mad.
Exactly.
The rest is public relations.
That's exactly right.
See, okay, so I'm with my people. Yeah. You're with my people. Okay. Ron Cassie, Baltimore Magazine, we're Sig, we're Cocos. I read last night, so Tuesday night, today's Wednesday. I don't want to give away if you're listening to radio, but the Carolina Panthers fired their coach, fired Frank Reich.
Frank Reich.
Which brings us back to our Oilers story, right? They fired Frank Reich, and the owner, Tepper, one of the richest men in the world, in America, makes you the richest man in the world. I think he could buy Bisciotti a couple times over. He's like a really rich guy, right? He's new to this whole sports ownership thing. He's fired three coaches now, right? I mean, they're working on their fourth guy. They got interim, right? He has a press conference, and the Charlotte Observer, the lead columnist, the Mike Preston of the Charlotte Observer, sat in the front row and raised his hand during an hour-long press conference, and they refused to call on him.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, that's where we are now. That's where we're either thrown out doing a crab cake tour at Coco's, or...
And it wasn't an oversight? He just ignored
it. No. They just...
Thought it would be controversial.
This goes back to Irsay saying to John Steppen, "You're a bad man. You're a bad man. No questions for you. You're a bad man."
Well, I'd be interested to hear from you guys about this, because I've actually talked about this with Max a little bit when it comes to like our Orioles coverage or Ravens coverage, that they don't need us anymore. You know, that they have their own website, their own writers, their own. They put their own videos out there, right? Their social media.
Their social media is a cheerleading engine.
Yes,
right.
So they don't
nonstop.
Right, but they don't need. They don't need us.
They don't need us.
They don't need us. They can get all the images of Lamar out there, all the Facebook, the videos on Twitter. They can get all that stuff out there.
It's a great point.
And it's filmed beautifully, and they
don't need us. Exactly the way they want it.
Exactly the way they want it. So they don't need the media the way they used to. Like, they used to want to put, you know, somebody on the cover of the front page of the sports section coming out of spring training.
I saw you guys did a big thing on Eric DaCosta a couple months ago. I read that.
Yeah, I mean, we have a great relationship with the Orioles and the Ravens, and I certainly have no complaints. I mean, they gave us two press passes, the Orioles did, to the playoff games this year, and we me and Corey McLaughlin covered those, and I have no...
As opposed to what they did to me. I went to Arlington with my reporter, and they refused my reporter access to his clubhouse pass while sitting us in the back, in the kids' table in the back, having the Texas Rangers PR director come to me and literally have to apologize. He's known me 40 years, who was the Orioles assistant PR, and say, "I can't let you in the locker room." I said, "It's your building." You know, so this is what I deal with when they're getting eliminated and I've flown 1,500 miles to cover the game.
We saw what John Angelos did to their play-by-play guy.
Sure,
I mean,
right.
Yeah. That's they operate in a different world. They're not like public officials who have some obligation, really. I mean, they ought to. They play in a publicly funded stadium. They're getting $600 million in upgrade.
Right, sure.
They should have some obligation.
They're refusing $600 million in upgrade.
No, they're going to take
enough.
It. They're going to take it when they sign the lease. They won't turn away. But they should have some obligation to talk to the press, and because they are getting so much public funding. I mean, an unbelievable amount of public funding. But they don't see it that way. They don't necessarily behave that way. And
let me ask you guys this then. Do you think that the public cares?
No.
That there is not that kind of hard, you know, access to, I mean, hard journalism.
Nobody cares about me, trust me. I'm out 2 years. Like, I've done this for 30 years on behalf of the people, other than people who love me. And I've had six people since I got here at 12 o'clock, six humans in this room come up to me and talk to me about Chad Steele. I'm not kidding you. Right. Before you were here, I had a former Raven employee who you met when you came in the door, who was a 1996, 97, 98 employee who now works for Susan G. Komen, who was in the neighborhood buying crab cakes at Coco's, came up to me. It's all when I go out one-on-one, people come up to me and they talk to me about it, but there's nothing they can do, right? Chad Steele's parading around behind Lamar Jackson on Sunday Night Football, which I just find amazing that the PR guy puts himself into the shot. The whole idea is get out of the shot, dude. You know where they're, get out of the shot. That's what professionals do. And I speak out, but if they can do this to me owning a radio station and having gone to every home and away game and bought tickets, if they do this to me, they can do it to anybody, and everybody knows that.
Well, there should be solidarity among the media folks. I mean, but remember Bob Ehrlich, when he was governor, did it to Michael Lesker, banned him from, and then there was another journalist from the Sun, banned from the state house and reporting, and Governor Hogan blocked people from his Facebook page, and was, you know, that became an issue in court. They were challenged that the governor can't block people from the public facing Facebook page. But I think, to your point, you know, about, does the public want the kind of like in-depth, maybe investigative journalists and the kind of business-oriented journalists, the behind-the-scenes stuff in sports? I think they do. I think people get a lot of that through their own social media now. If you're on like Orioles Twitter and stuff like that, there's a lot of debate about player moves among people themselves. There's a lot of that conversation about who you're going to sign, who you're going to drop, what pitcher, not, you know, the free agent signings working or not working, midseason trades.
But the team itself has no front face, not even through its own channel. They don't even have Kevin Brown interview John Angelos or Mike Elias to say, what's the budget this year? Are we really going to go after a pitcher? What's the plan here?
Yeah.
What are you doing at shortstop and third base?
Well, you saw the way Dan Connolly got treated by John Angelos.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
We
talked
gross.
About that
by
last
way,
year.
By the way, Connolly was invited here today. He's going to do a crab cake at some point. But so Connolly gets treated like that. I get treated the way I've been treated. The guy in Charlotte goes to the press conference with the owner
That's
on Monday,
amazing, yeah.
And they don't. That happened to me with the Orioles. I mean, the Orioles. I have been the guy like Arnold Horshack. That absolutely happened to me at the warehouse the day Buck Showalter was hired.
Wow.
The day Buck Showalter was hired, I went and I raised my hand, and my arm still hurts from having it up in the air. They just refused to call on me.
Interesting.
Yeah. And they did this to the Charlotte beat writer.
Beat writer.
Not,
yeah.
not the beat writer, the columnist of the Charlotte Observer.
Yeah.
And if you Google it, I saw it. I'm like, who is this guy? Like, the guy tweeted, I had my hand up during the press conference in the front row, but somehow I was not called upon.
Yeah. Wow.
And then wrote a column on how this guy has clowned up the organization
right.
by having another firing in season right. of a head coach, a Super Bowl winning head coach, you know, like a,
right.
a Frank Reich was a Philly special in Philadelphia, all that.
You know, in journalism, you know, and this goes across sports, all serious journalism, you know, we talk about it with access journalism is, right? People are afraid. If you're a reporter at the Banner, the Sun, or Baltimore Magazine, you're kind of, you don't want to go too far over that line where you get banned and lose access. Because how can you be the beat reporter if you don't have access?
True.
Right? And this is whether you're covering the
or
governor.
As my friend said to me, if you're covering anybody. If you're not in locker rooms, are you really a sports reporter anymore? And I'm like, well,
right.
I don't know. I mean,
so there's always that card being held, whether it's the governor's office or the mayor's office or city council president or the Orioles or the Ravens, you know, state's attorneys, right? Marilyn Mosby's office. You know, I stopped getting emails from her and getting responses when she was holding press conferences. So that question about access journalism. The flip side is, you know, it's rarely worth the access not to push. If you're tiptoeing around and afraid of that, you're not really a journalist because the
guy, if I got to go kiss Chad Steele's ass to get a press pass, I'm not a journalist. I'm an ass kisser of Chad Steele.
If you're going to, you know? Yeah, and if you're going to, listen, there's not that many serious questions get answered at press conferences.
Right.
They all can parry those kind of questions. Real investigative journalism doesn't rely on the quote from
John Harbaugh
this
on a Wednesday about his injury report.
It doesn't, right? It's like sideline. It's like
sideline. It's like the injury reports with the Bengals 2 weeks ago on Burrow, right?
Right.
I mean, they just
sideline reporters need access to give you the little thing, but that's not really that valuable. So if you're really doing the hard hitting business kind of journalism or behind the scenes journalism, and you know, I think that kind of access isn't as important as people think. I think people as journalists think you're not really going to get. When you talk to people at that level, revealing information from a press conference or even an interview. It's nice to have. It's great to be in a locker room. It's great to talk to the players for sure and get to know them. And that's why we went to the playoffs last year. It was great to meet the guys in the locker room, get a feel for them personally. But if you're really doing the deep dives into the stadium, Maryland Stadium Authority kind of stuff we were talking about or the sale of the Orioles, it's not going to be revealed, you know, in a press conference.
Well,
you can watch the press conferences anyhow.
I think to our point in all of this is the optics have changed so dramatically for them and for their accountability and responsibility that the owner of the baseball team could try to hoodwink the governor and the Maryland Stadium Authority into giving $400 million of value to them where there's a parity clause, and the fans here say, what time's the game on? Are the Ravens favored by 3 or 4? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And
wow.
I don't. that's not good. There still has to be someone on the wall keeping an eye on all of this. And one of the reasons that you got jostled by Marilyn Mosby or I get jostled by the Ravens, it's because we're there to ask real questions, yeah. You know? I mean, and as I said to Wes Moore when he sat down with me at Costas last year, I'm not here to kiss your ass. I mean, I like you. You're my friend. I'll vote for you. But, like, when the lights go on, like, you're serving the people. My wife's a true believer. We voted for you, you know? Sure. Answer for this. Have accountability for it. You said you would a year ago when you were running. Same thing with Brandon Scott. Same thing with anybody. You know, I know it's a tough job, and I don't think it's easy negotiating with the Angeloses because I think they're morally bankrupt, and I don't think anything they would ever agree to is really an agreement. My 30-year history of them is if they agree to it, you can't sleep and think that you have an integrity partner. So obviously, Tom Kelso is going to say that on Friday because he's going to say, they asked for $600 million. We got them $600 million. We went and had it all done. Nobody raised a question, and then it wasn't enough all of a sudden.
I think, I mean, Mike can speak to this a little bit. I think fans are kind of two minds. Like, we want to just enjoy the ball game.
Sure.
Right? But then all that stuff last year really became like a little dark cloud in the silver lining.
What do you mean, the Kevin Brown thing?
The Kevin Brown and the Elise stuff. And all that became a little bit of like, come on, you know?
I mean, I don't think that the Oriole stuff was such a runaway
and
train.
And the Dan Connolly stuff, it all became a little bit of like,
I'm going to get you on mic, Rasig. There you go.
I'm going to put my other hat on.
Oh, okay. Well, that hat was so festive, though. Well, this is a 9-3 hat, though. I mean, I must say, it's a 9-3. It's better than that Bills hat you were considering. I'll tell you that.
That's right, yeah. No, I forgot what we were talking about, but anyway, I think sports radio also is a place, is a sounding board.
Yeah.
So you do know that. So fans do have an appetite for that.
Yeah.
They want to complain about their team, win or lose. You know, sometimes when you win and you turn on sports radio, fans are still ranting about, you know, what they did.
Oh, the
how
Ravens
they
are 9-3, and if you put on poor Brent Harris after these games,
right.
It's, you know, whatever thing's broken, it's still broken.
It's
and
still
I'm like,
broken, yeah.
And I can't address it that way. I can't address it at 9-3 and saying, hey, they have five tough games coming up. They still have to go out to the West Coast. They're going to play real quarterbacks for a while here.
Right, yeah.
You know, they're without their left tackle playing 100%.
Right.
They're without their tight end. They're without their quarterback. But,
you know, it's funny. Like, to your point, I just remember this. Like, we don't know Mike Elias or Brandon Hyde's contract situation.
Oh, I bring that up every day. I bring that up every day. I'm thinking to myself, if nobody else gets
along. That used to be a staple
along.
Of, like, when Earl Weaver or somebody signed a contract, right? That was, like, you know, the news being done, like, how much they were making, how many years. Like.
Great point.
The thing that ends all of this Oriole prosperity is Mike Elias saying, John, I can't live, like everyone else, I can't be associated with this place. And this place is crazy, and I helped you, and we won a little bit. But
yeah.
The one thing Mike Elias hasn't done, we're getting on the baseball here with Ron Cassie and Mike Risigliano.
Hot stove league.
Yeah. He's never gone down the hallway and asked for money. So, you know, that's... Let's take a break. It's 3:38. Take a break. We'll talk baseball. We do that?
Sure.
I did 53 minutes with Luke last week
on
baseball.
I still talk football, too. I mean, we have hardly... touched on that, and it's a good season.
What happened to your Bills? We'll discover that in the next segment. We're out here at Coco's. Rasig is my co-host with the K. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'm like almost, I have like four Raven scratch-offs left. I'm back to giving the instant lottery scratch-offs. Roz is going to give me some scented tickets to give away a little later on. We're going to be at Hollywood Casino on Friday. We're going to be at State Fair on Tuesday, supporting Dan Rodgers and his show at Gertrude's in the BMA as well. All of it brought to you by Window Nation. I'm going to wear my funky Window Nation hat during our bits. Because it's a little bit like the floppy hat, the Oriole floppy hat. It's not orange, but it's good. This kid over here has an ornithologically correct Oriole hat.
Oh, yeah.
That is, it's Hershey chocolate brown right now because he's worn it for so long.
That's the kind you like.
Yeah.
He got a hold of that back in 89, I think, at the Crown Gasoline Station. Yeah, and it's still coming through. That's also, our friends at Jiffy Lube Multicare. We love them. Big appreciation for changing our oil and all that. Ron Cassie, Rasig, hanging out, doing overtime. We're going to talk Orioles offseason. We're going to do more talking in the next segment, 23 minutes than the Orioles have done in the offseason. We're back for more from Coco's right after this. Stay with us.